We have 2 job openings. Go to our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Dearly beloved.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Prince vs. Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on Saturday, June 11th. Put on some purple, grab your dancing shoes and a bicycle for a rock and mobile dance party with Diablo. We'll gather at 7 p.m. at Sewell Crest Park on Southeast 32nd Avenue, just south of Hawthorne. More information at kboo.fm under Community Events. Again, Prince vs. Bowie, Saturday, June 11th at 7 p.m.
Tune in to KBOO Wednesday, June 8th at 9 a.m. for the second installment of our podcast series on criminalization, produced by the Center for Intercultural Organizing. We'll hear stories about profiling, criminalization, and featured commentary by CIO staff. Again, that's the second program in our criminalization podcast series, one produced by the Center for Intercultural Organizing. Wednesday, June 8th at 9 a.m., here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Pinkwashing Exposed, will play Thursday, June 9th at 7 p.m. Pinkwashing is a term used when entities engaged in terrible human rights violations promote themselves as gay-friendly to improve their public image. Israel is the country most famous for this strategy. Pinkwashing Exposed explores how pinkwashing works and what activists are doing to fight back, including activists from Seattle who succeeded in 2012 in canceling high-profile queer events and more. Again, that's Pinkwashing Exposed. Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
1, 2, 3, 4.
First you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you, they're holding the same card. Step 3 is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do and everything can change. So quick. Businessmen and TV sets will try hard to make sure it isn't so. You don't have a problem. If you do, it's not the same problem. And if it is, well, there's just nowhere you can go. But that many times, the history is rich, though we easily forget how a meme can take hold and grab you, how it can spread out like a net, and everything can change.
And good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. And my name's Paul Rowland. I'll be with you for the next hour until Political Perspectives comes up. And that was Dave Rovics, for those of you who don't know. And he will be playing at an event that we will be talking about, amongst other things, tonight at the First Unitarian Church Elliott Chapel, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue here in Portland. And that's going to be talking about no nukes from a lot of different angles. And Dave Rovics will be playing, and Harvey Wasserman will be there, who is on the line with us. We'll be introducing him in a minute. And Mimi German is in the studio with me, and I'll be introducing her in a minute. But first, I want to make one announcement of an upcoming event, a very important event this Friday from 3 to 7 p.m. at Smith Memorial Student Union Room 296 at Portland State. African and Indigenous Solidarity for the 21st Century, with some powerful speakers. Kanahus Manuel, who we've had on KBOO in the past, who's been spoken here in Portland at PSU, from the Secwepemc Nation up in Canada. Victor Puertas of the Yagua Nation. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., as everyone should know, whose father was viciously murdered by the Chicago police back in the late 1960s. And he's with the Prisoners of Conscience Committee and the Black Panther Party Cubs, and Jamila Borden of the All African People's Revolutionary Party here in Portland. This panel discussion is an attempt to process and address issues of the impact of colonization on Indigenous and African / Black communities, the impacts on our current lives as Indigenous and African Black people, how we continue to struggle under colonial rule, how our collective struggles are tied to each other. Of course, that says we and our from the point of view of people in those communities. Of course, and subsequently how our liberation is tied together and how we might support Indigenous and African Black liberatory struggle in the 21st century. And if you want to read more about the description of that event, again, this Friday from 3 to 7 p.m. at Smith Memorial Student Union Room 296 at PSU, you can go to their Facebook page under African and Indigenous Solidarity for the 21st Century. And I wanted to start with Dave Rovics, a little bit upbeat. Sometimes I think I should give a trigger warning to this program because we do talk about a lot of heavy-duty stuff, and today is no exception. So with that, I would like to introduce first Mimi. Good morning. You're the founder of No Nukes Northwest and the Radcast. Good morning, Mimi.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back where everything seems sane.
A little island of sanity we try to create here. And Harvey Wasserman with Solartopia, a solar energy proponent and longtime, since the 1970s, activist against nuclear power. Hello, Harvey.
Hey, great to be with you. Thank you.
Great. I hope your line holds up. I know you're in a car on the way to the airport to come up to Portland. So let's cross our fingers and hope that all goes well for the time you're able to be with us. So let's just start out on why you're coming up here, Harvey.
Well, it's such an incredible honor because the Golden Rule, the legendary Golden Rule ship, which sailed into the nuclear test zone in the 1950s, has been revived and refurbished, and it's going to be in Portland, and we're going to have an event there tonight. Mimi knows exactly where it is, and I'm just really thrilled to be coming up there to speak at this ship because it's such a symbol of the struggle for peace in our world, and a struggle that we really have to win soon. and so I'll be there with Mimi, and Mimi, of course, is a great campaigner on shutting the Columbia Generating Station, the last nuke in the Northwest, and we have to do that. I'm talking to you from California. We're actually on the road to the Oakland Airport, and here in California, we're trying to shut the Diablo Canyon reactors, and we're making great progress. Nuclear power is very much on its way out. Within the last 10 days, we have had announcements of the shutdown of four American reactors, three in Illinois and Three Mile Island Unit 1 in Pennsylvania, their owners have announced that they will all shut. So we're really looking at a kind of a tsunami here of reactor shutdowns, and we're hoping that the Columbia Generating Station will be shut in the very near future as well.
And that's what we will be talking about, that because there is a drive for a referendum on the shutting down the Columbia Generating Station. And,
there were major referenda in Oregon way back when that led to the shutdown of the Trojan nuke. And, it's remarkable, these nuclear plants, they take up all our time and our energy, and then suddenly they're shut. And it's a great thing. And the people worked really, really hard for many, many years to shut Trojan. And there were, as I say, three referenda. And actually, we never won any of them. But we came very, very close, and we showed that the public, there was a substantial percentage of the public that wanted Trojan shut, and that's how it happened. And so a vote to shut CGS will also be very, very significant.
And, the people who are new to the area in the last 20 years, new to the area, people of the younger generations probably don't know about the decades-long fight to attempt to prevent the Trojan plant from being built, and then, of course, the Trojan Decommissioning Alliance to get that thing shut down, which it finally was. And there might actually be some things to talk about from what's left over from Trojan as well. But we'll see how much time.
This radioactive waste and all this other mess that these nuclear plants leave, it's an unbelievably stupid technology, completely irresponsible, leaving our children and grandchildren all this radioactive disaster. But, it's just a bad phase of history and of energy generation. And we're in the midst of a solartopian revolution where renewable energy is just completely taking over. The prices are plummeting. The efficiencies are rising. There, in California alone, there are 55,000 people working in the solar energy industry. That doesn't even count wind. And so, this is really happening with us. The photovoltaic cells, I believe, will be the biggest industry in the history of the world. It's a very much a revolution, a parallel to what's happened with the internet. And we're just going to keep pushing along. And every time we shut one of these reactors, it's a giant step forward for the survival of humankind. And that's what we got to do. And CGS is obscene. It's obsolete. It makes no economic sense. We're having these terrible leaks now at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, threatening the Columbia River with radioactive poison. So it's all very clear what has to happen. We just need to push the political pendulum in our direction a little faster.
There is so much to talk about. One thing that is on a lot of people's minds who listen to KBOO and who are paying attention, of course, is the explosion of an oil train coming down the Columbia River Gorge, something that people pretty much knew was bound to happen sooner or later, given the rate at which those trains derail and explode all around the country, and the fact that they are coming down on a weekly basis, the Columbia River Gorge. And of course, people have been very active in Portland and Oregon around the Northwest in opposing oil trains, coal trains, terminals, liquefied natural gas. There's a burgeoning movement that the Pacific Northwest is one of the epicenters of against the fossil fuel industry and infrastructure, which of course is tied to the global warming, which is rushing at us at an incredibly rapid rate. And but one thing, it's difficult to tackle any of these singly, but to take them all on at once is kind of a mind-boggling thing. And one almost wonders why we continue to attempt it. But maybe our own survival might be a good reason. So,
we win. I mean, we've been winning these fights. It's very gratifying. There are way more people working in the solar industry now in the United States than there are in coal. Coal is definitely on its way out. I call it King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. And the whole paradigm of how we get our energy now is shifting because we've had an era of centralized power with fossil fuels and nukes being on a centralized grid. But what renewables allow us to do, especially solar, but also to a certain extent wind power, is to have the communities control our own energy. And the reason that we're being pushed back so hard by the corporations is that we're stripping them of the control of our power supply, and this is a very big deal. So I have no doubt that the anti-fossil fuel campaign in the Northwest will ultimately succeed, because those fossil fuels destroy the planet, and B, because we have cheaper alternatives, which the community can control. And so it's a dual movement here, and we have witnessed in in our recent era, the technological revolution that's making this possible. Wind power has just completely gotten much more efficient, much more profitable, and way, way, way beyond what we can get from fossil fuels. And so that's one of the reasons that we're winning, and we're going to continue to win. And I have no doubt these campaigns in the Northwest against the oil trains and coal will succeed. We're having a big problem with gas. So the Obama administration just okayed offshore fracking, which is catastrophic. And, you know, that's the next big fight. But in the interim, these other technological advances are booming ahead.
Well, you know,
we just had an announcement yesterday, by the way. I'll slip this in, that there's a federal grant came down for wind power offshore from Cleveland in Lake Erie, and this is a big deal. We've been pushing for this for decades, and now these windmills will be built. I think it's 8 or 10 miles offshore in freshwater in the Great Lakes, and this is the first major step forward for big wind farming in freshwater. And so, you know, bit by bit, we're pushing ahead.
I want to bring Mimi into this to talk about the Columbia Generating Station. You brought up, I'm really glad you went in that direction, Harvey, because, you know, you're of the generation that, you know, coming out of the 60s, you know, the 70s and 80s were really interesting times in terms of, you know, carrying forward that energy and the whole appropriate technology movement to actually go, you know, go towards decentralized production of energy, you know, do it yourself, a whole. And of course, that was such a fundamental challenge that the pushback was enormous. And we've seen the results of the pushback, which basically, you know, defeated the general thrust. But within that, there's been still people developing these technologies, but we haven't really come to grips with the, you know, the consumer society itself and the growth economy, which seems to be the major contradiction that we're facing. But I did want to bring Mimi in because we had talked about this whole issue of the relationship between nuclear energy and these other forms of energy, the fossil fuels, the fact that, you know, in some sense, in this burgeoning movement against fossil fuels, nukes have sort of, you know, are sort of like, where are they exactly in this picture? It's not that people are consciously leaving them out, but maybe we do need to pay a little more attention. And so that's what Mimi's been doing. And there's this new initiative to shut down the Columbia Generating Station, which, of course, as Harvey said, is the last operating nuclear plant in the Pacific Northwest. So first, just for people who don't know, what is the Columbia Generating Station?
The Columbia Generating Station is the nuclear power plant that stayed online after Whoops fell apart in Washington. A lot of people remember Whoops, and this is Whoops 2, which got a new name, the Columbia Generating Station.
And that's an acronym for what? Whoops?
Oh, it's Water...
Washington
Power... Thank you.
It was the Washington Public Power System.
Right. So...
And there was the biggest... It was the biggest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the world.
and because of that... Right. And because of that, people in the Northwest think that, you know, it all fell apart, nothing survived, and yet, here we have one of the worst in the United States nuclear power plants. It leaks... So often we track the leaking of this. We can prove the leaking of this with you know, looking at EPA graphs and NRC event pages and, you know, numerous ways. So the proof is it's leaking and we need to shut it down, and we can shut it down. So anyway, you know, there's a lot going on with some of the things that Harvey was talking about and how it relates to the water issue in the Columbia River with CGS. We have issues all across the U.S. with climate change, with warming waters, which are where nukes are. Nukes are either on lakes or rivers because they need such an incredible amount of water to cool them down. What happens when the amount of water in the rivers decreases? What happens when the level of the temperatures in those waters increase? And how does that affect a nuclear power plant? Well, the answer is very, very badly. We're seeing it in the Northwest already from the Columbia with salmon. And if you understand that our salmon is in danger due to the waters of the Columbia, think about what happens with the waters of the Columbia to the nuclear power plant and what that means for catastrophic devastation in coming days, coming months, you know, in coming years for the Pacific Northwest.
And so talk about historic efforts and current efforts to get this thing shut down.
Well, with the Columbia Generating Station, things sort of moved along. In 2012, Occupy Portland started No Nukes Northwest. There was a group of us, and we formed No Nukes Northwest, where we wanted to bring attention to Hanford. And then from bringing attention to Hanford, we had a big rally up in Richland and made a lot of news. That's what we wanted to do, you know, show the world, hey, Hanford's still here. It's a terrible disgrace. It's a monster of a pollution machine. In the meantime, we learned more about the Columbia Generating Station, and we realized almost no one in the Pacific Northwest knows that we have a nuclear power plant. So what we did first was we went to the Portland City Council to try to get them to accept a resolution to support Washington shutting down the Columbia Generating Station. Oregon does not get to vote on whether or not CGS stands or shuts down. So the city council said to me in emails after emails, we will not touch this. So I said, well, let's go to the Seattle City Council and see what we can do there. And I learned from that the Seattle City Council has sway over the largest PUD in Washington, and that is Seattle City Light. And the ownership of CGS is owned by numerous public utilities. So if the public utilities pull their vote and say, hey, you know what? This is really too much money. We don't need this. We believe in really moving forward with other forms of cleaner energy, real clean energy. If we could get Seattle City Light on board and to remove their vote by the pressure of the Seattle City Council, now we're getting somewhere. Well, that basically, more or less, and I have to say it that way, just happened. The initial resolution that we submitted to the Seattle City Council was completely watered down. However, the idea is the same, that if possible, they will push the Seattle City Light to pull their vote. And this is sort of what's in process right now. So we have that, and we have the initiative. And between these two ways of going about this and alerting the public in Washington State that they can shut down CGS and need to shut down CGS without question, we believe this is going to happen.
And I'm very, very impressed with the organizing that's being done up there. And you have to remember that these kinds of campaigns have succeeded all over the United States. In 1974, Richard Nixon said there'd be 1,000 nuclear reactors in the United States by the year 2000. Well, in the year 2000, there were 104. And we now are down, there have been a total of about 133 nuclear reactors, commercial reactors, built in the United States. We have shut more than 30 of them. We're down to 99 in the U.S., and it's because of campaigns like the one that Mimi has laid out. And we're going to talk about that tonight at the Golden Rule. Mimi has the address. And I have no doubt that we will see the Columbia Generating Station will be shut. The question is, how quickly can we do it? And the bigger question is, can we get it shut before it blows up? You know, for decades we were told by the nuclear industry that a commercial reactor could not blow up. One of them almost blew up. We did have a small explosion at Three Mile Island in the middle of the meltdown. Then Chernobyl blew up, and they said, well, that's a Soviet reactor. But at Fukushima, we saw four reactors blow up, and those are General Electric power plants. So we are really looking at a race against time to shut these power plants down. I have no doubt that Mimi and this wonderful movement up there will eventually succeed, but it's got to be sooner rather than later. These plants are getting older. They're getting more dangerous. Their workforce is retiring. There's not a new generation of reactor operators coming up. And we just got the clock is ticking on these reactors. And at the same time that it's going in our favor on renewables. So it's a beautiful strategy that Mimi and the groups up there have worked out, and everybody needs to sign up. Let me tell you something. There's nothing more gratifying in life than knowing that you are part of shutting down a nuclear reactor. So people need to sign up and come hear us talk tonight, and Mimi will really tell you how to do it.
Well, actually, I have right in front of me, it's this evening from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, the Elliott Chapel. That's at 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue, for those of you who aren't familiar. And Helen Jacquard, who I interviewed last week on my program, who's a Golden Rule crew member, associate member of the Veterans for Peace, Harvey Wasserman, who you've been hearing, Kiana Judah Angelo, a Marshall Islander with the Living Islands support organization. And of course, the Golden Rule was on its way to the Marshall Islands when they were doing the Bikini Atoll atomic tests back in 1958, the year I was born. And Mimi?
Yes, I want to mention a friend of mine, Bonnie Raitt, the great singer. Her father was actually on the send-off crew of the Golden Rule. He wasn't on the crew itself, but he's a Quaker, and he was at the send-off of the Golden Rule when it first went out into the Pacific. The Golden Rule is a really magical icon of the movement for human survival and of the peace movement. It has so much great karma attached to it that everybody in the Northwest should come see it and be a part of these events with this ship. And, you know, it was actually underwater for many years, and it was brought up, and now it's at the centerpiece of the Veterans for Peace movement. It's a tremendous thing, and everybody should come. I'm so excited to see it and be on it, I can't tell you. And anybody who comes down, bring your kids. It's a real thrill to be with this great ship.
And of course, there are other events, and I'll just briefly tell you about a couple of them. We'll get into it in more detail later in the program. The Peace Fleet, of course, the warships are coming to Portland tomorrow, and there will be a Peace Fleet to contrast the parade of Navy warships in Portland tomorrow. And that'll be tomorrow afternoon at the Portland Seawall downtown on Waterfront Park. I'm not sure what time. Do you know, Mimi, when that's going to be?
No, but I think there's a main website for everything with the Golden Rule, which is... I don't know if it's goldenruleevents.org or goldenrule.org.
Golden Rule Project.
Project.org. Yeah, and there's a list on there.
So that's tomorrow afternoon.
I'm at the Oakland Airport. I'm going to go jump on an airplane.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to see you all up there. Meet us at the Golden Rule. Meet Mimi. She's a fantastic activist. And we're going to shut this reactor and move into a solartopian Golden Rule world. So thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Harvey.
Thanks, Harvey. We'll see you. See you later on.
Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good flight. And that was Harvey Wasserman, longtime anti-nukes activist. It'd be interesting to get his perspective from those many decades of experience. So that's happening tomorrow. The Golden Rule kayaktivists and other peace boats will provide a message of peace in contrast to the glorification of war and warships tomorrow. Then there'll be a potluck with the Golden Rule crew Friday, June 10th from 6:30 to 9 at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House. That's 4312 Southeast Stark. Again, that's Helen Jacquard, the Golden Rule Project Manager, and Carol Erner with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and music by Peter Ford. And the number to call in and join us in this conversation is 503-231-8187.
I'd like to say one thing before our first caller, before we take the first call, and that is for people who are unclear about the destruction to our environment from nukes, I just want you to know this. This came out yesterday. The EPA has unveiled a plan allowing radioactive contamination in drinking water at concentrations vastly greater than the levels permitted by the Safe Drinking Water Act. And this is something that the EPA is working on right now. And the reason for that is that nukes are leaking so badly that we have radioactivity in our water supply.
And of course, we could talk about Fukushima. There's a new article by Robert Hunsaker. If you don't think it's bad enough, just dig a little deeper. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard. I find myself combating, the bleakness of the situation that we're facing. But at the same time, it's there is a new world being born as the old world is dying. I can't remember who said that, but I don't think it's ever been true. I think it gets truer and truer every day that passes. But we need to rebirth ourselves and do it fast. So anyway, talking about Three Mile Island, and then that film came out, The China Syndrome, and this whole idea of this the molten nuclear reactor core burrowing into the earth was the China Syndrome, right? That it could just burrow all the way down through the earth. It sort of got laughed off as a sort of extremist fantasy, but if you read this article, they don't know. They don't know where that is. I guess there's at least one, maybe two molten cores that are somewhere below the old structure. And it's truly frightening. And speaking of water, you said before we went on the air, Mimi, that it's actually the Tokyo's water is in the aquifer there under Fukushima.
Yeah, they built the nuke plant. They built Fukushima on top of the aquifer, which supplies water to Tokyo. And really, Japan has been radiated. And it's not a lie. It's not an exaggeration. I'm not here to tell you what to do with your lives, and I don't want anyone to tell me what to do with my life. But really, if you go to Japan, if you have family in Japan, know the facts. The facts are that Japan has been radiated by Fukushima. The water supply is completely contaminated. The food is completely contaminated. The soil on top of the earth is completely contaminated. We have people out there who I know in my circle of citizen scientists who walk around with good Geiger counters, reliable Geiger counters, sending us pictures every single day of anywhere they go in Japan. And they are seeing plutonium and radioactivity on the ground. How do we know? Because it sends the Geiger counters to the umpteenth mode, to as we used to say here, to 11. And, this is very serious, folks, and we don't want that to happen here with CGS.
So with that, we do have some callers. Let's go to our first caller. Eric, go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, maybe it was Karen.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to ask Mimi a question about whether new reactors were slated to come online or whether they have been coming online. I'm just thrilled that this movement has been so successful, and I have had a great deal of consciousness about Fukushima. I'm a two-time cancer survivor, so when I know a lot about Fukushima, and I know a lot about the radioactivity leaking into the Columbia from the Hanford plant. So my question is, are more of these plants scheduled to come online?
There is another plant coming online on the East Coast, and Obama didn't stop that and gave his permission. Obama is a very pro-nuclear president. And then we have the issue of it's called new nuclear technology. These are small modular reactors that OSU primarily is the source for. They're making them. And because Oregon is not allowed any longer to have nuclear power as a source of energy in our state, apparently we're still allowed to make nuclear power and send it elsewhere to be turned on, which is the plan.
So Oregon State University is pioneering these new generation of nuclear power plants?
Yes, with federal grants.
Huh. That's something that we should be talking about. I think our signal reaches down that way.
So when you hear small modular reactors or you hear even environmental leaders talking about new nuclear technologies might be safer, it's not true. New nuclear technologies all make nuclear waste. None of these new nuclear technologies, like SMRs, have been tested. They haven't even been built yet. They're in the process, and they're being bought ahead of time. So this is going to be the next phase of what we're going after. We've begun to go after this. We, a group of us had gone down to the Oregon Senate Committee on Energy, I don't know the proper name, and we went because they allowed NuScale, which are the main owners of this SMR technology here, to talk and promote. It was like an infomercial for our energy, the Senate Energy Commission in Oregon, to allow them to promote SMRs and the building of SMRs. And they wanted to be able to use Oregon as a place to build the SMR, to have the SMRs. So we need to be very careful with who is involved in our energy programs in our Senate, in Oregon, in the state of Oregon. This is extremely dangerous, and this is not coming down the pike. This is in the pike.
With that, let's go to our next caller, Nancy. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Nancy Newell, and I helped close the Trojan nuclear plant years ago.
Awesome.
And we're just going to do this again, and it's fairly easy to do because the administrator of Bonneville Power has full authority, according to the market test, on how much it costs. It cannot even begin to get close to market costs. They are way over it. And he has the legal authority because four governors tried to close it, and it was refused closure over 10 years ago by four governors from Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, to close it. So he can today just get on the phone, say it is time to close it, and be done with it.
So who refused? Who refused closure of it?
He has the legal authority, the Bonneville Power Administrator. I think his last name is pronounced Mainz, M-A-I-N-Z-E, I think is how you spell it.
So they have the ultimate authority over the CGS?
Yeah, because the governors, they refuse the governors, the federal government refuses the governor's request to close it over 10 years ago. And here we are with all this nuclear waste we don't know what to do with, the expense of it. $1.7 billion, Robert McCullough's book said, since 2013 is going to cost us extra to keep this thing running. So why would we want to bother with this when we have all the legal authority and nobody is acting on it? The congressional delegation is not saying a word about it except, promoting some aspects of nuclear, some of the delegation. So they're putting us in a crisis. That could happen any day. It's designed like Fukushima. The containment vessel, it's on an earthquake fault, is not sufficient to cool it. So why isn't it happening? So that's where we started the initiative. And Miriam's doing a great job on the show, I must say.
Thanks for bringing that to light, Nancy. I think one of the problems that we have that we need to get through immediately, like today, with people like Paul bringing this to the conversation piece inside your homes, inside your cars, inside your reality, inside your consciousness, is that there are so many illegalities in the continuing powering on of CGS. This is basically, we could look at this as an illegal operation if we chose to. We have documents that state that this should be closed down for a lot of different reasons, but because we have the NRC, which is also a promoter of nuclear energy, it is not a group that was designated to protect us, it was designated to promote nuclear power. We have the NRC saying we're going to relicense all of these power plants across the United States because that is really what we were tasked to do. In the meantime, people like Nancy have information, places that we can go as citizens to pressure. We could go, we can call the BPA, we can call Bonneville Power and tell them, hey, you've got the power to shut this down. Let's stop with all this, making us have to go 100 different circles to shut this down when you have the power to do that right now. So I encourage, people to understand what Nancy's saying and call the BPA. Tell them to shut it down. They can do that.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling, Nancy. Do we have another caller? Who is it? Well, let's just go to our next caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you. I was on with you about a minute and a half last week. And here we are right back again talking about the disasters of nuclear power. And as I had mentioned last week, the KeshFoundation.org, Mr. Kesh is a nuclear physicist. He's developed the new science of the plasmic field. And in that, we've got answers to this. We have a power generating unit, or let me say a power source that we've put up this week, a homemade unit in Oregon City that is now collecting plasmic energy to replace electrical energy within the house. The technology that is used in this was also used to in Fukushima. There's a long story there, and I've got a link, but I don't have the recall of which specific link it was. But it tells a story. There's a whistleblower there who was involved with Fukushima, who took this technology to TEPCO. TEPCO refused to use the technology, and since these teachings are free, and they can access this information online, they learned to produce a thing called GANS, G-A-N-S, which is gases acting as nanostructure. And when TEPCO produced this stuff themselves, they have now cleared up all of the radiation from the reactors.
I'm sorry.
They've done this in 5 months rather than the thousands of years it was talked about.
No, we're going to have to disagree with you there regarding the cleanup of the... Go ahead, Mimi.
There has been no cleanup in Fukushima. There is no decrease in radiation. Everything is increasing in catastrophic numbers, numbers that have so many zeros attached to them regarding the powers of radionuclide decay that is happening over there. That's just, for me, this is, it's a dream, it's a fantasy, wish it was true. But unfortunately, Fukushima is going to be with us for hundreds of thousands of years, whether we're here to see it or not.
Well, thank you for calling. You called last week, and again, I can't remember the website you gave, but there's some things we wanted to talk about here. You know, when I had Helen Jacquard on last week, she brought up... I don't think she intended to say it in the way that I heard it, but it was something that really started making me thinking. I don't think she was intending to minimize the imminence of global warming, but she sort of contrasted it with the imminent presence and danger and threat of nukes, whether nuclear weapons or nuclear energy. And I think that's something that we haven't really talked about much as activists, as a radio station. You know, I mentioned that sort of the relationship between nuclear energy and fossil fuel energy is something that's a difficult one. I think that it's difficult to address all these things at the same time, but one can address it by looking at, you know, the fact that they're all produced, as Harvey said, by a centralized grid system and by centralized control and authority systems. And those are what we need to address. But looking at the relationship between nukes and global warming itself is something that might be important to do in terms of looking at the not just the viability, but the immediate threat of nukes in terms of floods, in terms of fires. So why don't you talk about that a little bit, Mimi? You know, I've been collecting these various articles. I remember when they had that fire down around Los Alamos.
I remember that.
Few years ago, there was a lot of talk about what would happen if it got into the nuclear waste. There is the huge catastrophic fire at Fort McMurray, which is still burning, that there's a nuclear waste site right there, that those when the floods happen in, Nebraska, there's a nuclear plant right there. This is happening, and we've come very, very close. And who knows, you know, anyway.
Fortunately, Fort Calhoun, which is where those floods happened, is one of those reactors that is being closed down. Hooray for us. I have a list just so everybody can really get a little bit of the magnitude of climate change, climate chaos on what is to come in the United States for our nukes. So this is just a list of things that we could put together last night. ICE shut down the Byron Nuclear Power Plant in Illinois. This is all within recent years. There were floods at Fort Calhoun that shut it down. There was a tornado that shut down the Surrey Nuclear Power Plant. There was an earthquake that kicked off two reactors. It turned two reactors offline at North Anna.
That's in Virginia, right? I was near there, yeah.
There were frozen pipes which shut down Pilgrim in outside of Boston. There were fires at the Hanford Reserve. We've got millions of gallons of waste in the ground from leaking tanks there, plus the Columbia Generating Station on the same grounds.
Plus the Cascadia subduction zone. Who knows what what an earthquake.
Right. And the list goes on. So there were fires that we talked about that went up the hill to Los Alamos. There was a lightning strike at LaSalle Nuclear Power Plant. There was a tornado that shut down Paducah. There was a due to warm waters, Millstone in Connecticut got shut down. Due to warming waters, Brown's Ferry in Tennessee got shut down. There were two reactors at Braidwood in Illinois that needed permission to continue operating with 102 degree waters due to low rainfall, and that plant was made to not exceed 98 degrees. It got permission. You know who it got permission by? The NRC. So this is how this game works, and we are the ultimate, the Earth is the ultimate sacrifice for nuclear power plants. And again, where do we live? We got one planet, and we really can do this. We just have to take part in this movement to shut down nuclear power. Like Harvey said, we just in the last week have four power plants that are going to go into decommissioning. At the same time, Obama just okayed six power plants to be built in India by one of our builders.
So, looks like we have some callers on the line. Let's go to our next. Well, before we go to our next caller, let me just tell you that coming up on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, hear Criminalization with stories about profiling and criminalization and featuring commentary produced by the Center for Intercultural Organizing. And thank all of you KBOO members for your continuous and generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate, and that's how we power this station, which, of course, is also powered by a fair amount of electricity. But, you know, we're all caught in these contradictions. I would gladly renounce doing this program and even having KBOO on the air if we could shut down all of the nuclear plants and all of the coal plants and all of the rest of the noxious activities that we're engaged in. But we have another caller on the line. Rebel, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I hope you can hear me. I have two really important points, one about the nuclear Hanford and one about the Mosher oil train. I don't know if people remember. Oh, wait. I should listen to see if you can hear me. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sort of. Go ahead.
Okay. So Hanford, I don't know if people remember, but there was a big protest there in 2012 or 13. I can't quite remember. And Dr. Helen Caldicott, I think is her name. I was there, and that's when the governor of Washington was admitting there was actually a problem around that time frame. And he said at that time that it would be 2 years before it reaches the drinking water, so we're okay. I just want to remind everybody of that point. Also, some insight.
Okay, you're fading out dramatically. It's probably not going to work. I can hear you, but I don't know if our listeners, wherever they're listening, can hear you.
Okay, this is a really quick point about the Mosher train crash. This is insider information. I can't give too many details, but Union Pacific employees were trying to pay off people. And there's currently an attorney working on this. There's some anonymous people that are witnesses. You know, they were actually offered to be paid money to be quiet. And I just wanted to get that out there so everybody knows about that.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure without any attribution we can really talk much about that. But anyway, that's something that a listener called in with. So let's go to our next caller. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I've got two quick suggestions. Nuclear plants, I mean, I'd love to shut them all down tomorrow, but that ain't going to happen. So in the meantime, the short term, I suggest that all nuclear power plants worldwide be required to have a steam-powered emergency cooling water pump, and that it be plumbed in such a way that it's earthquake proof and does not rely on any electrical power for its operation. Pressure relief valves on the main reactor can drive a steam turbine that can drive a cooling water pump, prevent a meltdown. In the longer term, to dispose of nuclear waste, the Earth's core is cooling. We're starting to lose our magnetic shield that's keeping the solar radiation from blowing the atmosphere off the planet. Why not take our nuclear waste, send it to the Earth's core, and try to heat it up a little bit?
Well, I think that's what the Fukushima solution, I think it's headed down there.
Well, but it needs to go a whole lot deeper.
Oh, okay.
And it needs to be in controlled reactions, and I think there are portions of the core that are cooling faster than others we need to maybe focus on.
Mimi, what do you have to say about that?
I have to say that, let me go to point number one that you raised. The people who have access to making rules regarding nuclear power and how they're run starts at the DOE. The DOE is a proponent of nuclear power. They, in order to change anything, would be an admittance that there is something wrong with nuclear power, so that's not going to happen. DOE gives directives to the NRC. The NRC, again, is a proponent of nuclear power. To admit that something is wrong with nuclear power is just not going to happen. So any kind of fix, whatever that fix is going to be, is not going to come from any kind of source. There is no option that way. The only option is to shut these down and convince governments and the people first that we have alternatives to nuclear power, that anybody saying that we need to keep nuclear power online for another day is just not in really the right, they're in an old paradigm. And it's time for that paradigm to die. It's time for us to reseed our thought process, our consciousness, with a new way. And that new way does not in any way, shape, or form include nuclear power for one more day.
And how about the second point, sending the waste to the Earth's core?
I would never, I'm not even going to address that.
Okay.
I don't think this is something that... First of all, I don't know. I'm not going to address this.
Okay. Well, let's go to our next caller. Harry, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Is there any way that we, the people of Oregon, can sue the people of Washington for radiating the Columbia River? And they're radiating our side of the Columbia River, our banks of the Columbia River, Hanford, and the nuclear power plant are in Washington.
I really enjoy the way you think. This is part of reseeding. How do we come to ideas and work on those ideas to make them a little bit more effective than, you know, to make them work? I've thought often about how can we sue the state of Washington. What we need to do if we're going to sue the state of Washington, if it's even doable to sue the state of Washington, is get some lawyers on board who understand these things. So if you want to look into that, I am seriously open to communicating further with you and working at a stronger idea, a more focused idea on how we could go about that.
How can people reach you?
People can reach me at through email at info@radcast.org. R-A-D as in dog, C-A-S-T, radcast.org. That email will come directly to me.
Okay. Are you still there, Harry?
What we do with the nuclear waste, canisters at Trojan, we can launch them into space.
I do not want to destroy the universe with all of the folly that we have done here that harmed us here. I am not a fan of destroying the Earth's core. I am not a fan of destroying universes that surround our Earth. We've done enough damage to ourselves. Let's not take it further.
Well, you know, these suggestions, though, do go to, you know, a serious issue that there's a certain, you know, I think all of us feel a certain desperation when we, you know, not only are we not addressing in a serious way Fukushima, Hanford, you know, you name it, all the nuclear waste problem is just sort of keeps getting put off into the future. We're not stopping the things that are creating. So I can understand why people, you know, I see it kind of clutching at straws. But you know, do we have better solutions? I mean, the only solution that I suggested, you know, when I did my first show on Fukushima, was there has to be a general takeover. Take it away from TEPCO. Put all the best experts of the world. You know, we have to like focus on priorities. That's like an Earth crisis. It's like Fukushima's an Earth crisis. I mean, I compared it to Chernobyl. You know, and I hate to do this, but you know, you had a socialist system for all its horrible faults that included creating Chernobyl to begin with. you know, it made the terrible decision to sacrifice human beings to address in real time, because you have to do things in the timely manner. If you miss that window of opportunity, we see what's happening with Fukushima. Anyway, we could go on and on about this, but, you know, they made it, and they actually did succeed to a degree in containing the damage of Chernobyl for all the terrible radioactivity it released. Fukushima, we see where that's going, you know, so I can see it's understandable that people, you know, look at sending things to the Earth's core or sending it to outer space. But no, we have to stop this mad rush towards continual technical innovation to make profits, reverse the whole system, and deal with the problems that we've created. It's probably not going to happen, but... Okay, we got another caller. Go ahead, Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, the problem with nuclear plants, as I see it, is that they're grid-powered. They need the grid because the reactors have to be constantly cooled, and so you have to have the electricity there. Even if the thing goes down, it has to be cooled. So they're all connected to the grid, and the grid is vulnerable to earthquakes, cyber attacks, mass coronal ejections, and they always say, well, we store about 2 weeks worth of fuel on hand to keep the electricity going, but it may last longer than that, especially if there was a big earthquake, and and so also you have to keep the spent fuel rod pools cool, and if there's any problem there. So the thing I'm in California. The thing about the California grid is that it's 51% fossil fuel powered. So for the nuclear power plants to say that they're carbon free, they need the grid to keep running, and the grid is 51% here in California fossil fuel driven, plus the energy it takes to mine it, to refine it, to transport, to guard it, to build and decommission nuclear power plants. It just takes a lot of it produces a lot besides just the carbon it produces itself. So that's the big lie, that it's carbon-free. It's actually carbon-intensive. But the thing is that because it's grid-powered, because it's connected to the grid, it's vulnerable. It really is vulnerable to a meltdown.
It's incredibly vulnerable, Harvey. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. This is something that I talk about often. And one of the things that isn't added to your list is that the grid can go down from squirrels on a wire. The grid can go down from balloons hitting a wire that is attached to the electrical system of a nuclear power plant. The grid can go down from, you know, raccoons. All of these things have actually happened. And they're documented in the NRC event pages. So it's not like this is more folly from those of us who understand the damage that nukes can do to all of us. I really appreciate that caller knowing that this is a carbon-intensive industry and a carbon-intensive energy, and it also produces, while it's running, carbon-14, and it puts that out into the universe, into our universe. So the whole concept of nukes being clean, folks, you know better than that. So stick with what you know. We know better than that.
Well, thank you for calling, Harvey. We have to let you go because we have a quick call back from Nancy Newell. Go ahead. Nancy?
Yes, I wanted to say something about Moser. Warren Buffett is complicit in that because he controls 80% of oil transport through the Northwest states. And he is not an environmentalist at all. And he also owns a bottling company. He is part of Coca-Cola's ownership and sells bottled water in Moser for people that no longer have drinking water in that city. Can you believe that? I mean, this is what these corporate thieves get away with. Robber barons.
Thank you.
I want everyone to be aware, too, that in the mix right now from the nuclear industry are nuke trains to be coming out, over 1,000 nuke trains shipping nuke waste from Trojan, from Richland, to wherever they can create a space for our nuke waste to go. Those trains will be coming right through here. So that is in the pipeline.
That's a lovely prospect.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we got to go in a minute here. I just want to reiterate that tonight at the First Unitarian Church, you can hear Harvey Wasserman, who's on earlier. You can hear Mimi, who is still on. Helen Jacquard of the Golden Rule, Teresa Rayford, Fred Schaefer of the National Association of Atomic Veterans, Chuck Johnson of Physicians for Social Responsibility, music by David Rovics. That's at First Unitarian Church, 7 p.m. this evening in Portland. Tomorrow, join the Peace Fleet to contrast the parade of Navy warships. That'll be in the afternoon at Waterfront Park at the Portland Seawall. Potluck with the Golden Rule crew. Friday, June 10th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark. And events in the Gorge, June 12th in Cascade Locks in the evening, June 15th in Hood River, June 16th in Stevenson, June 18th in Vancouver. And remember, the initiative to shut down the CGS is I-855, and that's going to be coming up when?
The initiatives are happening right now. You can download and print off initiatives. You in Oregon can take them. You can collect signatures. You cannot sign them, but you can collect in Washington. We need Washington signatures on there. I-855, go to radcast.org. You will see a menu tab for the initiatives.
Thank you so much, Mimi. And we got to run. This is Paul Rowan with Wednesday Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 16th Annual Village Building Convergence, June 3rd to June 12th, to take place in locations all over Portland. The Village Building Convergence is an annual celebration of placemaking, community, natural building, music, and art. During the daytime, there will be 35 natural building and public arts projects to take part in. During the evening, there will be food, speakers, musical performances, and more. Again, that's the 16th Annual Village Building Convergence, June 3rd to June 12th in Portland. Information on project locations, performances, speakers, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to welcome the Golden Rule Peace Boat to Portland, Wednesday, June 8th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. In 1958, a crew of Quaker peace activists attempted to sail the Golden Rule to the Marshall Islands to interfere with U.S. nuclear bomb testing. This bold, nonviolent direct action inspired a worldwide movement leading to the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty of 1963. On June 8th, there will be a panel presentation and discussion of their past work and plans for a peaceful, sustainable future, featuring Harvey Wasserman of Solar